Monday. Open wide dev fans.
Get ready
to stuff your face with JavaScript, CSS, node modules, barbecue tips, Git workflows, breakdancing, soft skills, web development. The hastiest, the craziest, the tastiest web development treats. Coming in hot, here is Wes, Barracuda, Boss, and Scott, El Toro Loco, Tolinsky.
Welcome to Syntax. In this hasty treat, we're going to be talking all about pointer events in both CSS and JavaScript, which is something you might not know, that they are a thing in both CSS and JavaScript. We're going to be talking a little bit about what and why and what the difference is and why you might want to use them and sort of, you know, some of the potential pitfalls, downsides, any of that good stuff. My name is Scott Tolinsky, and you are listening to the Syntax Podcast. With me, as always, is Wes Boss. How you doing, Wes?
Hello, everybody. I'm doing great. I'm excited to talk about pointer events.
Yeah.
Which I had no idea that they were coming to JavaScript. I knew that there was like a unified API for doing events, pointer events, but I didn't realize that it was coming so soon or is already in all of the browsers. So I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, me too. This hasty treat is sponsored by Sanity. Now, your backend data and everything like that, it should reflect the type of data that you have on the front end. As in, your data is not standard. It's not just a text box and a text area and calls it quits with that. Your content is typically much more unique and dynamic than that. And Sanity is the BOIF, as in bring your own front end data service, allows you to store and use your API as a service that is totally gives you the full on ability to have your data in the back end reflect the uniqueness of your data in the front end. And so Sanity is one of our favorite tools for bringing your data to your front-end websites. Nowadays, we have things like headless sites and front-end code that's totally optimized with things like Gatsby.js and static sites, but the whole back-end piece, what do you do with all of that data? Where is that replacement for the blog post where someone can go in and edit their stuff or even just store all of their data? Let me tell you that Sanity is the solution to that. Sanity is just really super cool. They put together a little demo for us, and we became believers immediately after seeing that demo. And it's just so much fun. It allows you to use like actual components in the back end of your site to give you full end customization of the back end of your site. Again, your front end code, your front end data is not typical, and Sanity knows and understands that, and allows you to have totally custom stuff. So check it out at Sanity.io/syntax. And you're going to go ahead and you're going to get a nice little free plan here that is free 99, as in $0, no credit card required. It's going to give you 3 users, 2 data sets. This is the tasty plan. They put this thing together just for Syntax listeners. So check it out at sanity.io/syntax and check it out. Seriously, this is one of those tools that when you're looking for where do I host my data with this thing, Sanity should be right at the top of your list. So you want to check this thing out at sanity.io/syntax.
Awesome. So let's jump right into pointer events. Pointer events are in CSS and they are in JavaScript. So we're going to do an explainer episode, explain what both of them are. So we'll kick it off with CSS. In CSS, we have this thing called pointer events. It's a property. It's been around for a long time and it's well supported in all of the browsers. And essentially, it allows you to just ignore the cursor or the clicks on an element. So if you have a div that is overlapping something, sometimes, like let's say for example, I've got an image tag and that image tag is overlaying some, like I'm working on my new website right now and I'm going to overlay some grunge texture over top of some of the text. However, I don't want to make my text not selectable because that's not a good thing to do on your website. And if someone were to try to select the text, they would actually be dragging the image instead of trying to select the text. So what you can do is you can select an element and you just say pointer events none. And what that will do is it'll tell the mouse and any mouse events that you have in JavaScript, the default ones like clicking links or selecting text or custom ones that you've built in JavaScript, it will tell it just to ignore that element as all. So that's really all there is in CSS. You can say pointer events none to allow the mouse to be totally ignored on an element. And then you also have pointer events auto, which will flip it back to the default. There's some other other ones that we have here. Visible, visible painted, visible stroke, fill stroke. Those are all for SVG, which I would imagine would be very helpful in doing some sort of graphing where you only want people to be able to click on certain parts of the SVG.
Yeah. I mean, I use pointer events not a lot in animation or just typically visual flourishes, things that aren't like important to the site and maybe something that is sitting on top of another div. And maybe you don't want this thing to interact or affect how, you know, it is your other actual useful elements on your page, especially elements that are like transitioning outwards. Right. If something's it's fading out or whatever, maybe it's still sitting on the top of everything. You don't want your users to not be able to click something, even though, you know, the opacity of this thing is at a 0.05 and it's just about done and the user goes to click on it and can't do anything. So on transition out states, I'm almost always putting a pointer events none on them just so the user can't interact with something that's on its way off the page. It's also useful on things like disabled buttons, right? You don't want your disabled button to register any sort of event. You just pointer events none on button. There we go. Disabled.
Yeah, I actually tweeted about this a little while ago. I'm like, why is there not a like actions event none? Because I had the sweet idea to I wanted to disable an entire form element. I was like, oh, I'll just give it a class of disabled and say pointer events none on it. But then what I figured out is you can still tab through. You can still use your keyboard to submit the form because it's pointer events. It's just mouse. It's not keyboard as well. So there's no like keyboard events, none that you can turn onto it. The solution to that is if you wrap your entire form, all of the contents of your form in a field set, the field set will accept a disabled attribute and that will stop. You can use the pointer events none to stop people from messing with it, as well as you can use the disabled attribute from stopping people from submitting the form.
Interesting. I'm almost always taking care of that stuff with like a JavaScript to check a field or something. But that's an interesting use case.
So another use case you could have for it is if you have a pop-up that you are trying to fade in. The problem with trying to fade in a pop-up is you generally have to have three states with a pop-up. You have to display none on that pop-up. And then you have to display block or grid and then set the opacity to zero. And then you have to, at the third point, you have to set the opacity to one. And you can't go from display none to display block and opacity zero and opacity one in the same fell swoop. You need to have that sort of three-step process, which is annoying in JavaScript because you have to like set a class of opening and then set a class of opening and open like 2 milliseconds later in order to make that transition happen. So one way you can go about it, I know there's lots of solutions to this, but one way I thought you could do it is if you set the opacity to zero, and by default, that will hide the entire thing, but setting opacity zero does not hide it from mouse clicks, meaning that it's invisible, but it's still there. And if it's overlapping your entire website, users won't be able to interact with your website. So setting a pointer events none on something that has a zero opacity will make it so that all mouse clicks just go right through that element. So you can't see it and no JavaScript events will fire on it. And then when you add a class of open, you just put opacity one on it and change the pointer events back to all.
Yeah,
which I thought was a pretty cool. I didn't know if other people had used it, so I tweeted it out. And Benjamin DeCock, who's like Stripe designer, developer, does all of the amazing layouts, said, this is pretty much what I've always been doing. So I thought that was pretty good. And this is actually how I figured out that there was a difference between JavaScript pointer events and CSS pointer events, because CSS pointer events are very well supported and you can go ahead and use them today.
Yeah, CSS pointer events have existed forever and ever, it seems like. I don't even know when that was at. Was that added in like CSS 1?
Yeah. Let's look it up. CSS 1.
It was before CSS 2, the revenge.
So if you look up pointer events on Can I Use, I was disappointed to see they weren't in Safari. And that's how I found out that those were JavaScript pointer events. And if you scroll down, you'll see CSS pointer events.
Oh,
and
they're little. What it says IE 11 was the first version to support pointer events in IE. Is that real?
Yeah, in CSS. Yeah. Yeah, so like they're not super old.
I thought they were very old. See, Chrome version 2 had them. Firefox version 3.
When was Chrome 2 rolled out?
Yeah. I can't believe that IE11, really? It took IE that long to get them? I'm surprised about that.
Ooh, there's a caret color property in CSS.
That's sick.
Anyways, that's not related to pointer events, but they are very well supported. The only thing they're not supported in is Opera Mini, which is not issue just because of that's not what Opera Mini is. Opera Mini is a stripped down text-based browser. So it's not like people are always like, oh, Opera Mini, but like that's not, you know, look into what Opera Mini is. So you don't need those features there anyways.
Yeah. And how many people are using Opera Mini anyways?
2% of the globe. So it's not nothing, but those 2% are, they're using it for a reason. It's because they're on a slow internet connection and they need something in the middle that will then strip out all of the images and, or compress the images and strip out all the CSS and whatnot.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm wrong about Opera Mini there. That does seem like a totally valid use case.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do a hasty treat on what is Opera Mini and maybe we'll open up our, but I've used browsers like this in the past back when I had my BlackBerry where what happens is there's a service that sits between you and the server and it will then deliver you a compressed version and a dumbed down version, not dumbed down, but basically people are just trying to get the content out of it.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
I wonder how that works with single page apps.
I don't know because Opera Mini does support JavaScript. Maybe I should just download it somehow and figure out what does these websites work.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, let's get into JavaScript pointer events, which are a little bit different because you think of CSS pointer events as just being, hey, it registered a click or whatever, we can interact with it or not interact with it. Or JavaScript pointer events are essentially sort of the modern take on the click or touch a mouse events that we've had for so long, right? Instead of mouse down or you know, touch or whatever like that, we're now able to use pointer events, which account for things that are relevant in the year 2018, such as we have no longer just, you know, a mouse and a keyboard. We have a mouse, potentially a pen if you're on a tablet or you know, those giant note phones, or you have touch. And so this API allows us to interact with websites using the tools that we're using in the year 2018 or 2019, that is mouse, pen, or touch. And I think this is pretty cool. It gives you all sorts of things like pressure and tilt and all stuff like that. But not only that, but it encapsulates all of these things in one API rather than having to have these separate events for different things or writing some sort of code that aggregates that.
Yeah, I guess it's funny because we had clicks and then you had touch. And then you had the ability to have multi-touch, which I think Safari can, and I think Chrome as well, can track up to like, I think it's like 21 different touch points. Mm-hmm. So I haven't got my toes out to try it yet, but
you should be able to get those piggies, man. Let's get them going.
You should be able to use like many, many touch points on a website. And then like Scott says, we've got pens. Those pens have different pressure. Yep. With your finger on Safari, you can tell. Somebody made a scale with the touch sensitive Safari API, which I thought was amazing.
That's so cool.
They figured out like what is the pressure of different touch points on Safari. And then they just laid their phone flat and they put an item on top of their phone and they registered the amount of force with that touch. And they kind of figured out how many grams or whatever that thing was, which I thought was so cool.
Yeah.
And then there's game pads as well. There's the pointer events API doesn't seem to encompass gamepad. There's a separate API for using gamepads, but I would imagine that, like, even if I think about like the Wiimote,
yeah,
the you know how the Wiimote like follows you around, that would probably be encompassed under pointer events as well.
I'm really interested in that because one of the projects I did in school via software called MaxMSP was using Wiimotes to control, like, it was like video manipulation and audio manipulation software that I'd written. So I made like essentially like a drum kit, and then it was rigged up to an audio application, Ableton Live. And then if I were to click the Wiimote trigger and like whip the Wiimote based on like how hard I whipped it, the accelerometer data would come in and it would like totally destroy the audio. It was like a really cool thing. And like sometimes I wish that stuff was more capable in the browser. So I'm really interested in exploring more of this stuff and now, you know, maybe potentially getting some of that data. I'm sure someone's written some sort of wrapper API for the infrared data for something like a Wiimote or a Joy-Con or something like that. But I think those like alternate interfaces are so interesting.
Totally. There is web Bluetooth and web USB. Maybe that would be a fun little episode where we each order something that is USB based and try to build something with it and just in the browser.
Yeah, I'd be totally down for that.
let's talk about what events we do have here on the pointer event. So there is over, which is fired when the pointer device is moved into an element's hit test boundaries. And What is hit test? Let me see.
It seems like more of a mouse-based thing, or, you know, does it track when the pen is hovering? That's actually an interesting point. I wonder if it does.
Yeah. So the hit test is the process the browser used to determine a target element for a pointer event. Typically, this is determined by considering the pointer's location, also the visual layout of elements in a document on a screen. Hmm. Not sure I understand what that means. I'll have to look into it. This is fairly new to me. I've always just done in the past. I've coded it with mouse, and then I use the touch events to sort of supplement that and provide a bit of a better experience. But it looks like I bet once Safari ships this thing, or using the polyfill, we'll talk about that in a second. This, we won't be writing click events much longer. We're going to be using pointer events. So there's over, enter, down, move. So move is what you're tagging, because it's potential that the stylus will move over the screen, but you're not actually touching the screen, so that you need to be able to keep track of that, right?
Yeah. So move is firing when you're hovering and not when you're clicked down or touched down or untouched?
Yeah, well, I would imagine with a pen, if your pen is close enough to the screen that it's registering but not touching the screen, that would fire a move event. I think that would probably fire a move event when you're touching it as well, but you'd have to have a Boolean of if it's down or not. Up, cancel, pointer out, where I guess where you, if you were to pull the pen totally away from the actual screen, pointer leave, and then there's get pointer capture and lost pointer capture. So it's a lot more complex. Events themselves can be pretty complex, but this gets a lot more complex. And in most cases, you probably won't need all of these, but it's kind of nice to have a simple API that encompasses all of these different types of inputs.
Yeah. And again, I mean, everyone's using new inputs now, and you have to account for that. And one of the cool things is that we know have to account for them individually. You have one API, and that, I think that's the dream right there. That's like that's some cool stuff. I'm really excited about this because I have an iPad with a pen, and it's like making me want to go do some experiments with this thing and see exactly how this pen will interact with this API. Maybe it's worth like putting together some sort of a playground for this stuff. It's interesting.
Yeah, because so I've got in my JavaScript 30 course, I've got like a Canvas demo. And based on how long you're dragging, the width of the canvas painter gets bigger and smaller, and the color of it just changes, like it goes through the entire rainbow.
Yeah,
and now I'm thinking, like, could you modify that demo to take in pressure as well as, I don't know, some other like tilt? Because you're telling me, or it shows me in the docs here, that you can get the tilt of the pen.
Yeah.
So based on what angle you're tilting the pen, could you map that to the rainbow and change the color based on that? That'd be pretty neat.
I wish I had more time for just playing around with this stuff, because that all sounds like a lot of fun. That sounds like a lot of fun.
You should do like a hackathon day where you just put out a video of a couple of things that you would love, you've been meaning to try.
Yeah.
And make a video out of it. That'd be pretty fun.
Yeah. Cool.
What else about this pointer events? I think that's about it. It's pretty simple to understand. I think that, we'll talk about support real quick.
Yeah,
what is the
bummer support? Yeah, it's actually pretty widely supported, and it's in IE 11. It's been in Chrome since like 2016, and Safari, like, what's going on, Safari? Why can't you get this together? Safari does not have support for this. However, there is a polyfill put out by the jQuery team called PEP. PEP stands for Pointer Events Polyfill, I think. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. So, unfortunately, it's not in everything, which you would want it to be. But no, it's not in Safari. And even in the future version of Safari on Can I Use is red. That says there is some caveats there. I think they're working on support for it. I think you might have a little bit more info on that, Wes.
Yeah, if you go to webkit.org, you can see the status of what they're currently working on. And it says in development. So I'd imagine in the next major release of Safari, we'll get it.
No, according to Can I Use, the next major release of Safari will have it available, but only under an experimental features flag.
Okay, so that means it's probably just about done. They want to test it out before they push it, which I don't mind, because like what used to happen is that they would just release it and then, or it would be released under like a vendor prefix.
Yeah.
And then people would implement it, and then they'd always be like, you have to, like, it works, but Safari does it in a weird way. Mm-hmm. And now, so what they're doing is they're just like not releasing it to anyone unless you want to try it. And I think that's a better way to do it so that it's for sure solidified by the time it gets into all the browsers. And I don't mind because the polyfill, I've talked to a couple of people who actually use this in real client facing projects, and the polyfill worked just swimmingly, right? It's JavaScript, so you can polyfill it pretty easily. So it's, I think it's probably something that we can start using today if you are okay with including the polyfill.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to start using it. I'm going to start trying some stuff out. I'm going to start getting down with some pen action going on and some interactive stuff here and see how it works. It looks cool.
Yeah, I've got the Surface Book here, which has a pen, and ooh, I think that does pressure as well. So that would maybe over the holidays, if I want to have a little fun with it, I'm gonna pull that thing out.
A little fun with the pen and the Surface. I'm down for that.
Awesome.
Cool.
All right. Well, I think that's it for today. Hopefully you learned a thing or two. If you have any other use cases for pointer events that you have found handy, make sure you tweet them at SyntaxFM and we will retweet them so that everyone's knowledge can get bigger.
Yeah. I want to see some code demos and examples too. If you've hacked together something that's like fun with this, or if you want to, if this sounds interesting to you, go hack together something. I want to see some fun examples of what people are doing with this cool stuff.
Absolutely. All right, that's it for today. Thanks for tuning in, and we will catch you later.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.